The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Four minutes after, I'm John Caldera in for George. George, I don't have no idea what George is doing. I don't want to know what George is doing. The guy works for a living. He's the kind of guy that makes the rest of us look bad. I don't need that. I look bad by comparison anyway. You know, I don't need somebody who's, you know, works too hard. He's always so clean cut. Starch collar. That could be his nickname. Starch. Just try it on. Work around it. Call him a starch collar a couple times. See if it fits. I think it could. Just a little something to think about. All right, 303-696-1971. I do love the Stooge conversation we were having. So thanks, Devin, for that. One of my favorite, I think I've mentioned this before. I had the true honor of getting drunk with Christopher Hitchens, the late, great Christopher Hitchens, who did not go by Chris. He promised his mother he'd never go by Chris, and so he was always Christopher. And he came to an Independence Institute event, and he spoke, and he was wonderful. He came to our alcohol, tobacco, and firearms party, and he was just perfect at it. In any event, as you know, he was a writer for Vanity Fair, and he got into trouble. What I liked about him was he was a true free-thinking guy, and so he would write things not caring who he offended. And he ended up going on tour with Dinesh D'Souza, and they would do these wonderful debates over the existence of God. And that Christopher Hitchens was a devout atheist. And as you know, D'Souza is a devout Christian. So it made for a wonderful, wonderful debate series. One of the problems I have with the debate is that there are very few good atheists out there. What I mean by that is that by nature, people who are religious tend to be evangelical, or they care that other people also have religion. If you got God, you want to share God with other people. Atheists, for the most part, just don't care. They don't care if you have God or if you don't have God, because they don't believe in God. It's not important to them. And therefore, the only atheists that really are good at the intellectual exercise of that debate, and I think it's a really important debate. I mean, for any human, I think it's a really important debate. It's left to very angry atheists. And I find that very angry atheists aren't really atheists. They're almost religious atheists. They're the ones who do the, you know, Freedom from Religion Foundation. These are the people who want to, you know, wipe away any crosses from the sides of public roads and things like that. You know, these are the people who've been hurt by organized religion. All right, I get that, and I respect that, but they're just angry about it. My point being that it's really hard to find the Christopher Hitchens and the Richard Dawkins, those type of folks, who will have a reasonable intellectual discussion about it, because you go out there and you want to have a deep dive into the meanings of is there a God? Is there a creator? And on the yes side of the aisle, there are libraries and libraries and C.S. Lewis, and you know, you could just go crazy on all the material, all the intellectual material, all the passionate material, trying to convince you, because they want to convince you, the answer is yes. On the other side, there's not a library. There's like a pamphlet. You know, there's just not there. Because people go, nah, no, logically it just doesn't. It doesn't work. It takes a leap of faith, and therefore just not there. So when Dawkins puts out his occasional book, or Christopher Hitchens does it, I really do appreciate it. When Hitchens and Dinesh D'Souza went on their roadshow, it was a really wonderful thing. You can catch a lot of it on YouTube. And what's great is here are two remarkably smart, remarkably passionate, remarkably respectful people disagreeing on the most debatable, unprovable key issues of humanity, and then going out and having a beer. Because if you're with Christopher Hitchens, well, he's having a whiskey. You're having something else. And it's just, you know, I find that to be amongst the highest interactions with humans are people who can do that. There was no death threats. There were no yelling of names. There was no bombing of offices because of a cartoon of Muhammad. You know, it was two guys having a debate on the most debatable issue for the sake of a spiritual and intellectual endeavor. Wow, that's good stuff. But Christopher Hitchens wasn't just limited to that. He got into the politically incorrect. He got into the Middle East. He got into all sorts of things, but he would occasionally dip his toes into humor. And one out of all the things he did, he said, there's no God. That didn't get him into trouble. He said, Islam is messed up. That didn't get him into trouble. You know what got him into trouble? You know what his biggest controversy was? It was when he wrote for Vanity Fair a simple little essay which concluded that, are you ready? Here it is. Women aren't funny. That's it. He said, women aren't funny. And oh my God, all hell broke loose because women aren't funny. Now, I love this. The next Vanity Fair had a double pullout cover full of all the comedians, you know, from Amy Schumer to Tina Fey and some other, you know, funny people. In my mind, some of the exceptions that prove the rule. What made Christopher Hitchens' assertion so good is he said that women aren't funny because they don't need to be. Most every man right now goes, ah, yeah, got it. No, it's true. Women aren't funny because they don't need to be. Well, not Thorpe, because Thorpe's a weird, happily married person who doesn't have to think about such things. But in the world, men, how to say this properly, men are fighting for women's attention. Men are trying to find a competitive advantage over other men to win the favor of a woman. It is rutting season up in the mountains. You go up to Estes Park and Rocky Mountain National Park, you'll see the elk. You know what the elk are doing? They're fighting. They're gathering their herds, their little harems. They're hitting each other in the heads. They're bugling. They get their harems. They impregnate their harems. And then the men go up to the hills afterwards and don't talk to the females, don't talk to the cows until next year. And then they hang out with their male buddies and watch football for the next year. I mean, it's just, but this time of year, they're looking for sex. That's what they're doing. Their competitive advantage is bugling and ramming each other in the head. Not all that dissimilar to what men do. So he said, you know, women don't have to be funny. Men have to be funny because if they're not good looking, if they're not powerful, and they're not wealthy, which is just powerful, well, they got to be funny. And that made perfect sense. He went on to say, and this is where stoogism comes in. Stick with me. See how it all comes full circle? He went on to say, there is a difference between male humor and female humor, if there is such a thing as female humor. And that male humor is cruel. Male humor is cruel. Now, I can't repeat the kind of jokes that guys usually say when women aren't around. I don't know why men don't say these jokes when women aren't around. I usually say the same jokes when women are there, women are not there, which is why I'm not invited to a lot of things. Anyway, men's humor tends to have a winner and a loser to the jokes. You get a couple guys together and they start busting each other's rumps. It's what they do. They start insulting each other. It's a form of friendship, but it's also a form of competition. It's what they do. It's what we do to say hi. And women don't quite get it. I think it's one of the reasons in the workplace, women can feel intimidated because they might sense meanness when it's not mean. It's just guys busting each other. Anyway, stoogism, the Three Stooges, is just kind of the perfect example of slapstick. That's guy slapstick. It's old 1930s. Oh my God, it's almost 100 years old. 1930s cruel slapstick. Doesn't that make perfect sense? Have you ever been around people watching the Stooges? Well, you have to be old. People don't today. Kids these days don't know the Stooges. Anyway, I think it's true. So just keep an eye. Next time you're joking, there's boy humor and there's girl humor. Girl humor is, I don't know. It's more situational. It's less cruel, outwardly cruel, which is odd because women are remarkably cruel creatures. But it's all mind warp kind of cruel. Whereas men's cruelty is right out there in front. Hit you in the eyes with your fingers. Doink. Nyuk, nyuk. God, we're simple creatures. All right, did I go way too far? Yeah, I think so. There it was. But anyway, Google sometime Christopher Hitchens, why women aren't funny. And it's just, it's great. What was amazing was the outrage because anything men can do, women can be just as funny. And that's why we have now Sarah Silverman and Amy Schumer constantly talking about a vagina, because that apparently is the female version of male vulgarness. And it, funny or not, it's not quite the same. I find it gets kind of boring. Do women like Monty Python as much as men? I don't think so. I don't think so. There's a cruelty to Monty Python, too. God, I love Monty Python. Anyway. Hey, where were we? We were talking about so many things. Sorry, I get so distracted by this stuff. I was talking about a woman out in Olympia. Ah, see? That's all I was doing. A woman out in Olympia who's in trouble with her homeowners association. Why? She had a Black Lives Matter sign. It's against the rules. No, not because it said Black Lives Matter, but because it supported a social movement. And that is against the rules. Odd, though. In the same neighborhood, there was a Donald Trump doormat. There was a thin blue line flag on a house. But she got in trouble for a Black Lives Matter flag. That kind of stuff really bothers me. Because, yeah, I'm not a Black Lives Matter guy, but we've got to protect people's right to speak what they want to speak. So she had to take down this sign that was in her window. And so she did. She hung the sign inside her house. And last week, she was told she had to take it down. They changed the rules, a new rule, saying what kind of sign you could have inside your home. You can't have any signs inside your home that can be seen from the roadway or a neighboring unit. You cannot have signs or flags supporting or opposing political candidates, social movements, humanitarian causes, or religious beliefs. Which technically means somebody's got a crucifix on their wall. Well, that's got to come down too, doesn't it? As I read it, absolutely. Somebody has a gun safe you can see through the wall. Well, does that support the Second Amendment? This kind of stuff is ridiculous. Cancel culture is evil. Cancel culture is un-American. Cancel culture doesn't come just from the left. It often comes from the right. I think that's what this one is. What has your HOA board done? You have a story like this? What's the most ridiculous thing your HOA board has required in your neighborhood? I mean, what's the one thing it's like, what? We got to do what? What has that got to do with anything? I mean, it's one thing to say you can't park on the street. Your lawn needs to be mowed. I mean, I don't even know why you have to have certain colors of your house. If you want to paint your house pink, paint your house pink. Well, what if you live next to it? Well, then you live next to it. Personally, I think there's a value to being in a neighborhood where you're free to express yourself. I think it's getting more and more rare to be able to do that. What is your HOA? What is the weirdest thing you've had to do? What is the biggest fight you've had with them? How much have you had to spend with them? And by the way, the HOA isn't really your neighbors. It's usually some professional organization that you spend a lot of money for. And it's really difficult to fight. Now they're telling you you can't put a yard sign out? That's America. America, you don't tell me that I can't do something. 303-696-1971. That's 303-696-1971. In for George Brockler, I'm John Caldera. Keep it right here. You're on 710 KNUS. I'm John Caldera. Welcome. Good morning. Hey, by the way, I can't read your text this morning. One, I'm illiterate. Yeah, public schooling. Two, I got a technical issue here, so I can't read your text. So give me a call. You know what you used to do before you texted? You pick up the phone and you talk to people. 303-696-1971. What did you people do before cell phones? We made plans and kept them. No, really, Dad. What did you do? No, really. We would talk to people, you know, at school and say, why don't we meet up at that place at that time? And you all did that? Yeah. What if something changed? Well, then we didn't make it. That's crazy. Somebody told me that New York City just got rid of their very last payphone. Wow. And I guess it makes sense. If you're in need of a phone, there is somebody next to you that will lend you their phone if you just need to make a call. Everybody's got a phone in their pocket. It is true science fiction. Isn't it? I remember as a kid watching Star Trek, which I still watch the original. All right, this is just pure geekiness. So growing up in the 70s, you're in your parents' basement, you're watching reruns of Star Trek on the little 13-inch TV, and you don't see how bad the sets are. And what's great is it was filmed on film. And film is really high-quality stuff. Unlike in the 70s when they started videotaping all the shows, which is really lousy quality. So when you watch the old Star Trek today on your big 60-inch TV, or 58 or 50, I don't know what it is, but I've got a big TV because I'm a guy and I'm lonely and it's all I have in my life. And you watch Star Trek from the 60s, you go, oh my God, this is really awful. See Captain Kirk hit the button on the side of the wall to talk to the intercom, and the whole wall goes blomp, blomp, blomp. You know, it vibrates. You see the shadows of stagehands walk by. You see off stage, you see the marks on the floor where some stagehand put the tape for the actors to stand here and then go stand there. It's like, oh my God. It's just terrible. But as a kid, your mind just fills it right up. It's just spectacular. In Star Trek, they had those handheld communicators. And as a kid, I was fascinated. In fact, some people would try to make their own. They wouldn't work, but as a prop, you know, and you'd flip them open and go beep. And then years later, we had those flip phones. And it's like, oh my God, it's like Star Trek. It's like Star Trek. You open up this little flip phone and you can talk to people on the other side of the planet. Now, flip phones, if you have a flip phone, by the way, you have what is technologically the same as, you know, in Andy Griffith, when he'd pick up that phone off of his desk and he'd hold the earpiece to his ear and the other piece to his hand and go, "Mabel, get me Aunt Clara." You know, that's what your flip phone is. It's right up there with the phone on the wall where you take up the earpiece and you put it there and it's got the crank on the side. Because your cell phone is not a phone. It's like the last thing in the world it is a phone. That's why you talk to anyone who's, you know, 40 years and under, 35 years and under, their cell phone, the phone part is like the least important part. It is a massive computer connected to the world of computers. It is truly science fiction. And if you're talking to young people and you're like, "No, sweetie, if we wanted to watch something on television, we had to be in front of the television when NBC decided to air it. It was a Tuesday at 7 o'clock or whenever the Love Boat was on. That's where we would have to be until they came up with video recorders. And then it gave us a little bit of freedom. Now we get to program our own lives." Where was all this going? It was all going back to the thought that there's not a single payphone on the island of Manhattan any longer. Isn't that just sad? Where does Superman go to change clothes? What does the poor man do? Well, it's gotta be tough. Gotta be tough. Let's see. Did get a couple texts here. Let's see. Funny thing is that my Karens in my neighborhood always put up the yard signs around me. Not this year. This year, no Dem signs. They are so embarrassed. Oh, that's spectacular. Yep, I had a large Trump flag, one person texted me, on a big metal pole to wave a flag at flag wavings. It lived in my car. I needed to wash my car, so I put the flag in a bush in front of my house, so the HOA, complained. It was in the bush for 20 minutes. Oh, good God. Yeah, if you have any other ridiculous HOA stories, I would love to hear them. HOAs are just the worst. Why do we have HOAs? Well, partly because of an anti-growth ordinance that was passed. It was a law that Republicans actually passed in, I think, 1999 or 2000. And it basically said any new development needs to have some sort of controlling government that will pay for its roads and its sewers or something. It was more of a growth control push to push the costs of building the development right onto the buyers of the house instead of distributing it over the cost of the municipality. All right, fine, I guess. But what that meant was every new development got its own HOA. And as I think it was Jefferson that said, it is the nature of things for liberty to yield and coercion to grow, that people love to control other people. And HOAs are a wonderful way to do that. To say, you know what? Most of us like beige. So we'll just force everyone to have beige. Well, I think we should have the same window coverings inside our home. So all of our curtains look the same. Bleah. Yeah, for a society, a country that was built on differences, that made exceptional people doing different things, that was our strength. we now build these homes, these developments that try to push everybody into the same square peg. It's just ugly. I don't get it. By the way, I'm referring to a story coming out of Olympia where this poor woman was forced to take down her Black Lives Matter sign. The HOA said no signs, even though somebody else had a Blue Lives Matter flag. It was, you know, one of those American flags with a thin blue line on it. Cool flag. I like it. And somebody else had a Trump welcome mat on their door, but she had to get rid of her Black Lives Matter sign. She put it on the wall inside her house. So they changed the rules saying any political sign or social movement sign that you can see from the road or see from another unit, you cannot have on the inside of your house. No conservative, no freedom-loving American should like this, should support this. This is repugnant. This is not America. This is your home. This is your castle. You should be able to put up what you like. Anyway, if you have any sort of terrible HOA stories, I really want to hear them. I want to hear them. Why do we put up with that? All right, I'm going to take a quick breather here. When I get back, I've got the story I want to talk to you about. It's a story that no one, well, how to put this, you'll want to talk about. Public schools don't want to talk about. It's the transgender issue and locker rooms. You don't want to miss this. Keep it right here. You're on 710 KNUS. I'm John Caldera, in for George Brockler. I'm John Caldera, in for George Brockler. I tell you what, let's check in on the markets with Brian Gray from Alpine Planning. Brian, what are we doing this morning?
Hey, you know what? Listening to that Black Eyed Pea ad, that's got me a little bit hungry this morning, but we won't go there. We'll just focus on the markets right now, John. Currently, we got the Dow up 560 points, S&P's up over 80 points, and the NASDAQ's up 274 points. It seems like the fear might beginning to fade a little bit, and we might have a 1,000-point swing in the Dow over 2 days. The reason this is important is it's all psychological. People or investors, they like to see that Dow above 30,000 for a support level. And when we dropped below it yesterday, we saw the markets retreat just a little bit. Now, what are some of these reasons? We got a smaller than expected rate increase by the Reserve of Australia. That's lifting spirits. And then potentially we're looking down the road in November and investors are looking at a 50% chance of a half a point increase by the Fed versus the 75 point increase that everybody was expecting. So I don't want to say we've hit bottom here, but I want to say that we got a little bit of optimism starting the week, starting the fourth quarter. So if any of the listeners out there want to get that second opinion, give Alpine Planning Group a call, and we would love to sit down with you.
Brian, thank you so much. Alpine Planning Group is a comprehensive financial planning firm committed to improving your long-term financial success. Investing is a matter of trust, and they're prepared to earn yours. Give them a call today at 303-843-0918.
Thanks, John.
Goodbye, Brian.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
All right, I tell you what. What a great morning. Let's tee this up. I want to spend some time not just whining about this issue, but coming up with an answer to this issue. I want to thank Billy for pointing me to this story this morning. I didn't even see this one. I want to bring you to the great state of Vermont. I think it's Vermont. Yeah, it's Vermont that has by far the best state motto. Is it Vermont that's live free or die, or is that New Hampshire? I always forget. Because they're the same state. They look the same. One goes one way, the other goes the other way, but they're the same state. Anyway. Members of a Vermont girls high school volleyball team have been banned from using their own locker room. They now have to change in a single bathroom stall after they complained about a transgender teammate. Yep. Some teammates allege that the transgender player at Randolph Union High School made an inappropriate remark to some of them while they were changing in the locker room. And now they want the school to relocate the transgender player who hasn't been named. No details of the alleged remark. But Vermont's state law means the student can play sports and use the locker room, which corresponds to the gender with which they identify. By the way, it's the same thing here in Colorado. In Colorado, as I understand it, a student can play on the team for which that student identifies. That is, the student can be on the girls' swim team if he identifies as a she. Then he gets to play on that team. Okay. Not only that, but he gets to be in that locker room. Not only that, but he gets to be in the women's showers. Let me say it again. If he believes he is a she, then that person can join that girl's swim team or volleyball team or whatever girl's team and can use those facilities and can shower with the rest of the team. If I understand it, the accommodation is that if a girl on that team is uncomfortable with the transgender girl showering in the locker room, the biological girl can request some type of curtain, some type of shower curtain, because that will make it all better. I guess that makes it a wee bit better. All right, I want to spend some time in the next hour really diving into that one. But let's finish up a few conversations. I know we've been all over the board, but we can handle it. Let's go to the phones. Hey, Robert, welcome. You're with John Caldera. Glad to have you. Robert? And then he dropped off. Was it something I said? Obviously something I said. In any event, Robert, give us a call back. 303-696-1971. 303-696-1971. So, in this story, the player on the team told the television station how uncomfortable it makes her feel, saying it's a huge thing. Now, everyone's asking, why aren't you allowed in the locker room? So, let's just play this out. Shortly after the incident where the transgendered player apparently said something that made other people uncomfortable, the girls uncomfortable, the school sent out an email to families of the players informing them that the school has plenty of space where students who feel uncomfortable with the laws may change in privacy. Did you hear that? There are plenty of other spaces, if you feel uncomfortable, where you can change in privacy. The superintendent has yet to comment. So what does this mean? It means with about 10 players on the team, each of them getting changed in a single bathroom stall doesn't make sense. Let me put it a different way. The guy who identifies as a girl has now chased out the girls from the girls' locker room. Let me say it again. Biological boys are going into the biological girls' locker room taking their showers. The girls feel uncomfortable. Instead of asking or requiring the biological boy to leave, the biological girls are now required to leave their own locker room and get changed in a bathroom stall. Why a bathroom stall? Not just the bathroom? Well, because the bathroom is also open to biological boys. What? Does this mean we're going to have that rebuild every school facility to have a boys' locker, a girls' locker, a boys who think they are girls' locker, and a girls who think they're boys' locker? Back after this.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.